Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Text 25. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Etavad ukto parama tadmahan bhutanna bolingam alingam ishvaram aham chitasmai mahatam mahiyase shirshnabhanamam vidide nukampita. Then that supreme authority, personified by sound and unseen by eyes, but most wonderful, stopped speaking. Feeling a sense of gratitude, I offered my obeisances unto him, bowing my head. Purport. That the personality of God who was not seen but only heard does not make any difference. The personality of Godhead, produced the four Vedas by his breathing, and he is seen and realized through the transcendental sound of the Vedas. Similarly, the Bhagavad Gita is the sound representation of the Lord. And there is no difference in identity. The conclusion is that the Lord can be seen and heard by persistent chanting of the transcendental sound. Om Gyanatim Arandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Hasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. I've returned from Govardhan Hill, and during the day I'm just hosting so many various Vaishnavas. Now the Iranians have come, and we did Vrindavan Parikram today, and we stopped at one of my favorite places, the Tiastan, where the sadhus very strictly preserve Vrindavan in their lifestyles as the Goswamis were living 500 years ago. And they sing very classical bhajan. It's so beautiful, actually, amazing. We worship the dust of Vrindavan. It says that in Mayapur you can get love of Godhead by the prasadam, by Mayapur, the kirtan of Vrindavan, the dust. So I made obeisances in the very thick and sifted dust of Vrindavan. Now we're studying the story of Narada Muni, And it's so wonderful that we have people that have come before us that have shown us the way. Even God himself comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to show us the way to get love of Godhead. And the example of the devotees that we follow. Therefore, in bhakti, one of the most important principles is anugata. Anugata means that we, anugata, our path follows the experience of those who have traversed that path before. So important when you're going down a path to follow someone who has gone down that path before. In fact, the very definition of bhakti means that we follow the desire of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Anu Shilanam. Anukulyena, favorably. Anukulyena Krishna Anu. Anu means that we follow. We follow Krishna with the intention to find the way of his desire and to follow that. That's what love means, that you're focused on the desire of your beloved. That's what bhakti means. We're trying to find out the will of the universe, the will of God, the will of Krishna. As we're part of Krishna, we're trying to find that superior objective, that superior direction, and we follow it despite the irrational impulses of the mind and senses. The best definition I read was of Tapasya, the 11th canto commentary, that what does austerity mean? It means that despite the irrational wit, the irrational impulses of the mind and the senses, we perform devotional service. We perform the will of God, which comes through Guru. Despite the irrational impulses of the mind and senses. So it's so important to follow the example. And of course, key part of Narada's example and the key point of our own transformation is the advancement, the association of advanced Vaishnavas. I often mention that point to see what service looks like, to see the beauty of love, the beauty of service, the beauty of surrender. To see the beauty, and what do we judge ultimately? What is beautiful is consciousness of love. That's really the only beauty. It's consciousness of love. That's the new beautiful thing. And if we have that consciousness of love, we also become beautiful. And it includes humility and it includes compassion. And that's what our transformation is. Our transformation is from selfishness to selflessness. Think of others before ourselves. This is what saintliness is. And therefore, there's a sacrifice of what? Of what I want, of what my desires are. And that's how one finds Guru. One goes into the heart and one really wants truth. And if one prays for that truth, then the representative of truth in a corporal form appears before you to teach you truth and to represent that, to follow. So it all begins with the exemplar of truth, the devotee who's living his life in that type of service, and has that, because one has that consciousness develop, and one has faith, trust, in the sublimity of service. So we're part of Narada's journey. He associates with the great devotees, and he gets to see the beauty of service. He appreciates that. He aspires for that. And that right idea, that right consciousness, it attracts a teacher. When you actually want truth in whatever field of study you're pursuing, whether it's because spiritual field, when you actually want that, then someone can mold you and instruct you and train you, and it inspires our surrender and service without resistance of ego and envy and independence. When we have that tadviti pratipatena pariprasnena sevaya, when we're approaching the teacher, tadviti pratipat, with submission, with inquiry to understand truth and clear doubts, and with the mood of service, it inspires the teacher to give us everything they have, to give us the jewels of direction, to give us the jewels of realization. Rupa Goswami is given the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because his desire to please was demonstrated in his complete attitude of service, wanting to please. That's spiritual life. Spiritual life is when our consciousness wants to please God and wants to please those who represent God. And that becomes the standard for the movements in our life. And from our conditioning, we may not appreciate that, but when you actually see it, when you actually see what is a humble soul. Today we went on this parikram path, and we came three quarters of the way, and there was a temple of Jagannath, of Lord Chaitanya's associate, the deity of Murari Gupta. And it's Lord Chaitanya's baitik, it's where he sat. And we were walking by there, and let's go in. And then the pujari was so ecstatic. He was so wanting to please. It was just such a pleasure to be with him. And really want to please, not get our money. He really wanted to serve us. And he had they're the size of sweet balls, but the little fried malpuras, like dough and sugar syrup. And he gave us, and then we were about to go. He said, no, I have Jagannath Mahaprasad. And he came out with this incredible sweet rice. And we really felt it was mercy. We didn't pay for it. It was God's mercy. It was so sweet. It was so wonderful. It was so tasty. What was really tasty was his mood, his attitude of love, what a Vaishnava is. He's always focusing on what your needs are and seeing how you can be served. Anyway, we know the story of Narada, and as a young boy, the Bhakti Vedantas just saw that attitude, and they saw that faith, and then they gave that young boy what they have, and in terms of teachings, the love from above is called affection, and the love to the above is called respect. They saw the respect, they saw the faith, and they showered him with their affection. And what is their affection? It's what they know. It's what they realize. And because of his attitude, he was able to understand. Understanding is not such a matter of scholarship. Scholarship is memory. It's not realization necessarily, unless it's applied. Just like when we read the sacred text, you can read it in one or two ways. You can read it for power. Knowledge is power. It's one of the opulences that allows you to control the world. But But the higher soul reads not for the accumulation of knowledge, but the effect that knowledge has on one's consciousness. One reads and hears and associates with the intense desire to be transformed by the example, by the instructions. And when you have that attitude, you put yourself in a perspective where you actually understand the truth. Yasya deve para bhaktir tata deve. For one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and the supreme Lord, the imports of the Vedas are revealed. And how are they revealed? Because if you have implicit faith and trust, and you're seeking that authority of truth and knowledge in your life, when you're recognizing that it's glorious to be connected to something that is higher than yourself, when you have that trust, you'll experience service, you'll experience the relief and liberation when you no longer put yourself in the world to see the world as objects of your sense gratification. And when you actually want to be the object of the will of God, when you taste that freedom from ahankara of false ego and realize it, then when you hear the Vedas, you'll easily understand what they're about, because that's what ultimately they want to give one. But unless you want it, you won't see it. This is a principle, actually, of learning and studying, especially teachings of a spiritual or transformative nature. You won't learn a subject which you don't really want to be the truth. And that goes for the Bhagavatam. If you don't want the truth that the essence of life is to surrender to Guru and Krishna, you won't see it in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So Narada was transformed, and he had enough spiritual knowledge. When his mother died, he renounced the world, even at a young age, and then we're at the part where he went into such sincere meditation. Not just the act of meditation, but the attitude of meditation. He went into such a deep meditation book that was filled with the intention of getting the mercy of God and being transformed and having the truth manifest and surrender to it, that God actually appeared to him. And then only shortly, and then he just heard the voice of God, "I want to increase your hankering for service. Because if you sincerely can perform service, the intelligence that you get, the understanding that you get, even at just some sincere stuff, that cannot be thwarted by annihilation. The realizations you get from surrendering to God and wanting to serve Krishna, the realizations you get will make indelible impressions on the soul. And therefore, you will not lose it, even if you lose the body and the mind. It'll carry you to the next life with those impressions." But so he's hearing that voice. Okay, now the verse that what happened is Ishvaram, God, he was personified by sound, and he stopped speaking. Now he stopped speaking. Because he explained to him, you know, you weren't complete in your service. You weren't complete in that attitude. You still had some attachment. You still wanted something for yourself. You still had some motive. Therefore, you're not complete in service, because ultimate, the purest service
has no motive. And ultimately, we want to bring our consciousness to the mood of the purest servant. We have no motive. We just want to serve. We're the abode of selflessness. We're the abode of love. That's perfection. Narada had not yet achieved that. He wasn't complete in service. But God appeared to attract him to the desire to serve, and then disappeared to attract him to the desire to serve by increasing his hankering. And now God stopped speaking, and he felt such a sense of gratitude. You feel gratitude because you're getting something. And not only are you getting something, you're getting something way beyond what you deserve, way beyond what you can achieve. So feeling a sense of gratitude, which is really, he understood that what I've achieved can only be achieved by mercy or grace because it's so far beyond my capacity to attain. And it was so wonderful. It was so wonderful seeing God. It was so wonderful hearing God, hearing Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. If we just get a slight communion of the divine absolute reality, how that must allure our hearts, how attractive that must be, how beautiful, how kind, how opulent, how intelligent. And he had communion. He saw and he heard, and now it stopped. But all he could do is feel gratitude. If you get mercy, it can make you humble because it can make you reflect on how unqualified you were to attain that. Sometimes you have periods of happiness and periods of distress. It's all relative. I'm just reflecting on my own life, after years of struggles in various ways. So many opportunities are coming my way to serve. And I just realized, as things weren't coming and things are coming, it's completely the will of God. I'm not qualified at all. It certainly cannot be my effort that I've done something to get service and to get opportunities to serve. I don't feel that way. What I do feel is God is so merciful. Why? Because I am so unqualified to get what he's bestowed upon me. So unqualified. And I'm honest, I could look at myself. Why? It's only God's mercy. So he's feeling a sense of gratitude. And therefore, that sense is reciprocated with. Bhakti is not just a feeling. It's the response based on that feeling. I always quote that definition of bhakti, that bhakti is best expressed in seva, which means loving responsiveness to the Lord in the mind and the body and the words. Loving responsiveness. There's a response. So he's feeling gratitude. Loving responsiveness, and he expresses it by offering obeisances and bowing his head. And then the person of God is not seeing, but he's heard. And there's no difference. The terms in the Yoga Sutras, that's just Sanskrit terms, vachika and vacha. The expression of God and the object of God are absolutely non-different. So by chanting the holy names of Krishna, there's direct communion. It's not different from seeing God. And then by doing this, it actually becomes realized by that association with God in the form of the holy name. It increases your realization and your understanding and your vision, and you see within that sound. You see form within that sound. You see qualities within that sound. You see activities within that sound. And you see the vacha in the not just the vachaka, not just the expression of God. You see the object which is being expressed, and it's all there within the holy name. So he's getting this instruction. And then he goes on, Narada, we'll read one more verse. Namanyanantasya hatatra papatam guyani badrani kritani chasmaran kampayatam tushtamanakataspiha kalam patikshan dinado vimatsara. Thus I began chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord by repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. So doing, I traveled all the over the earth, fully satisfied, humbled, and non-envious. He thus began chanting the holy name by repeated recitation, ignoring the formalities of the world. Meaning, let me see what the word for formalities is. Hatatrapa, we're free from all formalities. Many did it from the heart. He didn't do it as obligation or duty. And he did it without inhibition and without any attachment that would inhibit that expression. Such a nice instruction. He gave himself fully to the activity and then made a comment on it. It's so benedictory. This chanting and remembering of the pastimes of the Lord are so benedictory. The sound vibration enters into your heart if you open your heart with faith and you experience God and you become attracted. And doing this, he began to travel all over the world. And he was fully satisfied. And he was humble. But he was without pride. Purport, the life of a sincere devotee of the Lord is thus explained in a nutshell by Narada Muni by his personal example. Such a devotee, after his initiation by the Lord or his bona fide representative, takes very seriously chanting of the glories of the Lord and traveling all over the world so that others may hear the glories of the Lord. This is a sincere devotee in a nutshell. He gets initiated and he commits. And commits to what? To the holy name, which means the recitation of it, the glorification of it, and develops a taste in such a way that he wants to share with others. Such devotees have no desire for material gain, which is one of the symptoms of anishtita bhakti, when devotion becomes not fixed. One of the reasons is that we do our devotional activities to become recognized. But here he says no, he had no such desire. And these people, they are conducted by one single desire, to go back to Godhead. So they're really fixed. Their faith is strong. It's clear. It's in the forefront of their consciousness. This is what's important. This awaits them in due course of on quitting the material body. Because they have the highest aim of life, going back to Godhead, they are never envious of anyone, nor are they proud of being eligible to go back to Godhead. Their only business is to chant and remember the holy name, fame, pastimes of the Lord according to personal capacity to distribute the message for others' welfare without motive material gain. Just very simple. They're chanting, they're tasting, and according to their personal capacity, they're sharing. And that's their singular aim. So this was Narada's example. And one who does that is fully satisfied and not envious. They're not envious because they have what they want and they don't want material things, so why are they envious of someone else? And they're humble because they're very satisfied in that position of service. And they're fully satisfied because that's what satisfaction is. It's service and love. Okay, I'm going to end now. So if anyone would like to ask a question, they can.
Hi, Krishna.
If anybody would like to... Hi, Bo.
This is Gail.
Yeah, Gail. Hi, Krishna.
I'm going to ask and then I'm going to mute my phone.
Okay.
The irrational impulses of the mind...
Yeah.
I guess, you know, those a synonymous word for that would be whims. And so my question is the use of the word irrational. Can you talk about the use of that word? Okay, I'm going to mute my phone.
Okay. Yeah, I was just repeating what I read in the purport. So I guess what irrational means is it's your following something that doesn't do you any good. That's the irrationality, that you may be doing so many things for happiness, but that consciousness, that fruit of consciousness, is a source of all suffering in itself. So those impulses that are not either are good thoughts that are devotional and service and are not things that are coming from the highest authority of God and the representation of that in the sacred scriptures, that impulses themselves, I guess we can take away irrational and just say the pasha means to neglect the impulses of the mind, that sense of impulse. The concept of impulse, it's something that you do not because it makes sense, but because you want to. Okay? So in that sense, it's irrational. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Thank you again. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Thank you for your class.
Hey, Hare Krishna. Thank you for being part of this Sangha for so many years. It's such a pleasure to have you on. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Shastra Das.
Shastra, see you soon. Great.
Hi.
I get these emails afterwards of the people sometimes who wanted to say hello, but they somehow it didn't work. But it's not everybody has to say hello, but the
the Sanghas are growing again. I'm seeing that when the numbers come. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end now. Ranjit Kopu.